Welcome to episode number 12 of the Inside Running Podcast. Thanks for joining us again. Welcome to my co-host Julian Spence and Bradley Croker. How are we going, fellas?
Well, Brady, how are you?
Yeah. We're good.
I'm going good. I'm trying to stay cool, though. It's been very, very hot up here in Echuca the last week. I think we've averaged 39 degrees, and yeah, I'm slowly cooking myself, but I'm feeling all good. What about you boys?
Yeah, Canberra's been very similar. We've had pretty much 37, 38, and actually, Julian was up here for the weekend, so he experienced a run in the furnace yesterday, Arvo.
The boys running together,
yeah.
Eh?
Yeah.
Looking forward to hearing a bit about this.
Oh, yeah. It went all right.
Yeah?
Slowed it down. It's a bit hot to talk.
The pace was tempo instead of jogging.
Yeah, pretty good.
All right. Yeah.
We'll get
it was all right.
We'll get to that in our weekly recaps. Julian, kick us off.
All right. So my week was pretty solid again. On Friday, before the week started, I had planned to have a down week, but then I had a really good, this is pretty silly, but I had a really good weekend. I thought, I'll drag it out one more week of sort of good, solid stuff. The body started to come together and I started to actually enjoy my running when I wasn't sore all the time. So, I ran 7K on Monday morning, went to Radford, and then in the afternoon went out to Brown Hill, and ran through the Gong Reservoir, which is a nice little pine forest. You're not supposed to be in there. We climb over a gate, but it's a pretty cool spot to go. Pine forest, which means to stay cool. And we start and finish at this oval where the Ballarat Swordcraft Warriors, or whatever the hell they want to call themselves, ninjas, practice their medieval sword fighting. It's probably the highlight of my week watching that happen. Then, so that was Monday. Tuesday, did a session. I'm going to progress these ones on the track. We did a session. Oh, well, I did this by myself, actually. It was 6x400 meters at, well, very much goal 5K pace. So it was 68, 69. And then 600 meters float at 155. So you basically, it's a non-stop kind of fartlek where you run 5K pace and then you back it off to about half marathon pace, I guess. And it's just a really good one to, I've been doing a lot of longer rest sessions where I've been working on finding 5K pace, and now I'm sort of backing down 6 reps of 400 with a float. It doesn't sound like much, but when you don't have much rest there and you're still working, it really changes your perspective on what a 68 second quarter is. And it feels the most like a race. This is what I call specific for 5K anyway. So I'm going to progress these where I draw out the 400 meters, maybe out to 800. I might do my final workout of this progression might be, maybe it'll be 4x800 at 68, 69, so 216 to 218 with 200 meters at 38 to 40. And I might do four of those in a row. So we'll see, maybe even 3 reps of that. And I think that's a pretty good 5K specific type session. You get a lot of time at race pace, but you also, and you don't take your foot off the gas really. So that's Tuesday night. Wednesday, had a run with Watto. He's doing some crazy stuff at the moment on Sundays. So he goes and runs like 40K in the morning and then 10K at night. And he always gets injured like early in the week, comes good again for the weekend, gets injured again. It's pretty weird to watch him repeat this over and over, but Wednesday morning was when the injury struck him this week, so we went out and I cut that short. I was going to do longer, but I'm not too fast on doing that midweek long run at the moment. I kind of want to make my sessions count a little bit more. Thursday I had a planned university test. I was going to go out to the uni where we were going to do a lactic profile sort of test where we take measurements of my lactate at different paces and then see where my threshold is a little bit more scientifically than the Garmin tells me. But the treadmill out there broke or something. I don't know. It just got cancelled late the night before, which really kind of messed my plans up because I had people work, like I had someone come in and work for me. So I went and did some hills. It was bloody hot that day. That was a 39, 40 degree day. So I went out early, did some hills, got some quality on the hills. Then in the Arvo, I think I just went out for a jog. It was bloody hot though. Yeah. And then next day, a couple of jogs out to Radford, did some strength again. And then in the Arvo, put the treadmill on in the store, got the aircon cranking, and just did 8K on the treddy, put the iPad up, watched a bit of Netflix, and then jogged home. So I got 2.5K in the heat.
What'd you watch on Netflix?
I watched this show called, it was like surfing in Iceland. So growing up, I was a surfer down in Anglesey. sometimes I still watch surf movies. This was about the guys that traveled to Iceland. They had the worst storm in 25 years, but they also got some amazing waves. So it was pretty cool. That was Friday night. Saturday, I had a really good session. 4x8 minutes. Did this in Vic Park. It wasn't hot. Like, we thought it was going to be really hot, so we kind of prepared ourselves for worst-case situation. And then we got down there, and it was like, oh, beautiful. 24, 25, kind of no wind, or just a light wind. And so me and Dolce did the workout, 4x8 minutes, 3-minute jog. I was going mainly by feel. We did it on a loop where it was downhill to start and then finished on the uphill. And every 3.12s, 3.12, 3.11, and 3.09. And that felt really comfortable, so I was really happy with how that went. Especially with some sort of climbing. No, it wasn't. Look, it's not hilly, but there's some downhill and some uphill. And then Sunday, I had to bloody fly to Sydney, pick up the van for work, and then drove to Canberra around mid-afternoon. So stayed with the mayor down there in the mayor's house, which was nice, with Brad. Brad and Viv looked after me and Bree. Brad took me out to Mulligan's, which is where he runs. Apparently he's the only one in Canberra that runs there. Because I talked to Herdy after I left Brad, and he said he's never even heard of it before. And he lived in in that Aruna? Is it Aruna?
Amaru, yeah, he lived Amaru. Pretty much right next to the nature reserve, and yeah, no one ever runs there.
He had never even heard of it.
Yeah,
bizarre. So, we ran. It was bloody hot. Jeez, it was hot. My heart rate was lower than Brad's for the run, which I was happy about, considering we ran the same distance. Oh, and then I had to run home. He dropped me at this place and said, oh, you can run home. And home was at the top of the bloody hill, into the wind, 40 degrees, along like a highway. It was just sucked.
What do you mean? Where did Brad go?
Oh, he took off. He was only doing a short little run.
Yeah, I only had 35 minutes and he wanted to do an hour. So I said, turn left and then turn right. And so he turned right. And I had to yell out to him, hey, wrong way.
Lucky Brad drove past at that time and goes, you're going the wrong way, because I would have ended up in Goulburn or something, I reckon. On a 40 degree afternoon, just absolutely cooking, going the wrong way on the side of a highway. It's just like not the most pleasant run.
So did you have something to do in Canberra, or just go visit Brad on the way back? Just convenient,
yeah.
Good
we heard he was in.
Good to hear you guys are getting along, having sleepovers.
That's good.
Oh, yeah. Went out for dinner, got him on the beers.
Gave him two.
He loosened up a little.
took him on a tour, took him up to Mount Ainslie, showed him the lights of Canberra.
Oh, yeah. We went up to the parking spot in Canberra. It was cute. He does like to talk about running a lot, though, Brad.
Yeah,
loves a good running chat. I can see why he's good on the podcast.
We're off to a strange start tonight. Very strange.
It's like another night. It's another night in the Kroger household. It's like the nights that he doesn't record, he just treats Viv as one of the boys and just talks running.
Yeah, very good. Sam, what, so no Sunday long run, just a little 14K through Canberra on the way home. Yeah,
very weird. Very weird, I know. Mm. So I feel amazing today because of it.
Yeah, fresh as. Leading into Vic Countries this weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's, I think, like, Dean, is it Dean or Craig Hufford?
Craig Hufford. Craig, yep.
Craig ran 342 a couple of nights ago at Hunter Track Classic, and he's entered in the 5K, so that'll be banging. He'll be setting a mean pace, or he'll be finishing very strongly, one of the two.
Mm, yeah, not a great competitor to go up against, I wouldn't expect.
It'd be interesting, it'd be fun, I'm looking forward to it.
Good sculpt to take, though. You take him down, it's you're going places.
Well, I reckon there'll be a few blokes like coming down from Melbourne for it. I haven't checked the most recent start list, but it looks good. Mm. Like last time I had a look, I thought, oh, this would be a race.
I like that, not doing a long run the week before the race too.
Yeah, it's amazing how good you feel. Like, I didn't expect to feel so good, but the long run really does take it out of you.
Mm. Right, Brad, tell us about your week.
All right, well, as you know, I love to talk about running.
Speak a bit quicker than Julian did, can you? Just move it along a bit.
Yeah, so I kicked off Monday with a session of 8 2-minuters with a 1-minute float. I guess I came off that easy week where at the end of the easy week I felt pretty ordinary. First part of the session, first few reps felt still a bit locked up through my back and hips, but then surprisingly started to feel good in the second half. And I ended up averaging 3:08 kilometre pace for the whole session, which was sort of 3:01s for the reps and 3:20s for the floats. So I was pretty happy with that. Then in the afternoon, just went out for 35 minutes at 4:15s. I had 2 hours on Tuesday, so that worked out at just over 29K at sort of 4:06s. Felt really good. Wednesday was a pretty light day, just 45 minutes in the morning and 35 minutes in the afternoon with some strides, just around that sort of around 4:20s, I guess. And then my big sort of marathon specific session for the week was Thursday morning, which was 2x8K with a 1K float. And I did this session a couple of weeks ago and it was quite warm when I did it. And the session was good, but I felt like I didn't have much left in the tank at the end of it. So my goal for this week was to finish feeling strong and feeling like I could almost do another rep. I remember Julian saying in the lead up to his Berlin marathon that that was the difference probably from his other preps, was that he was doing these longer sessions controlled. So anyway, the session went well. I averaged 3:16s for the first 8K, floated a kilometre in 3:36, and then ran 3:15s for the second 8K, and felt like really strong at the end. The biggest issue I was having was some of my shoes have been rubbing on the back of my Achilles, which is sort of aggravating it, and I should have taped them up. I think it's just the Pegasus. I just get really dry skin. It's a bit like a blister on the back of the Achilles, so that was a bit uncomfortable for the second 8K. But felt awesome cooling down. Like I sort of was running 4 minute Ks for my cool down. So I felt pretty fresh.
Did you wear what shoes? You wearing the 4%ers yet in training?
No, I haven't put them on. So that was just in that was the Zoom Flies.
Mm.
Why aren't you wearing them yet?
This week. Well, it's still five. It's still it's 6 weeks out still. It's plenty of time.
I've got your size in another one. You can wear one out. You can wear one out. There'll still be one there for you.
Only because you want to sell an extra pair.
Probably this week, because I've got 4x4K this week, so I might do it for that. So then Friday, just 60 minutes in the morning at 4:20s, and 9K in the afternoon, and it was 37 degrees, and I was running on that highway that Julian was talking about before. It wasn't much fun. And then I had a long run on Sunday, which I did fasted, and This will definitely be my longest run before BWA. I ended up doing 2 hours 35, which worked out at 38.4k at 4:02 average, with close to 600 metres of climbing. And the back end, I sort of picked it up a little bit. It was rolling sort of 3:45s down to probably mid 3:30s at the end. And that sort of gave me a lot of confidence because I did it fasted and I didn't have any nutrition, no water, nothing like that throughout the whole run, and still felt like I was full of running at the end. So, yeah, I was really happy with that. Then in the afternoon, just got out for 8K at 4:20s in 37 degrees again. So that was 46.5K for the day, which is my biggest day of running ever. And then yesterday was, which is Sunday, 45 minutes in the morning at 4:20s, and then that run with Julian in the afternoon at 4:13s for 191K week. So it seems like that easy week has really helped me. Plus I got some treatment during the week, which, and he found that my hips were pretty locked up. So once he sort of got that sorted, I've felt really good ever since. So, yeah, no complaints from me.
Just a question about...
I love Sean Crichton's comment on your long run. Extremely impressive training run, Crokes. There's so much more to that comment that just seems like, to me, that... I don't know, you could talk to Sean about it more, but I read that and go, he's telling you you're training out of your skin, which when you listen to his podcast, you'll be like, I think if anyone else listened to it, I'm sort of reading that going, oh, he's basically telling you you're training too hard there. Not that I think you are, I'm just saying that's what,
well,
that's
can
what
I just ask the question I was going to ask, Brad, do you have those paces planned with your coach? Like, so when it's 2.5 hours or 38K or whatever, like, do you guys have a plan to sit between 3:55 and 4:05, or are you just going totally on feel the way you wake up on the day?
Yeah, I go on feel. So there was a slight change to that session. So originally it was meant to be 35K with no real pace on it, but he actually doesn't mind me running a little bit quicker on a Wednesday and like my longer run. So more around that sort of 4:05 to 4:10. But I don't know, because I was meant to do a session on like today, Monday, and I felt so good. I'm like, well, I did 39K before Canberra Marathon, and this was my last opportunity. So knowing what the program is for the next 4 weeks, my last opportunity to get like a longer run in. And because I felt so good, I'm like, well, I may as well just make the most of it, and I'll just can the session on a Monday and push it all back. So yeah, like this is, and I figure 6 weeks out, it's long enough out that it shouldn't hurt me too much. And I've made sure I've had good recovery since that run.
I like it. And you said you felt good and you're strong and you didn't have any nutrition. So if you're good enough to do it, do it.
Yeah. So, good signs. I feel like I pulled up pretty well from it. Felt good this morning running. So,
That's good. My week started down in Hobart. It was a Monday after the Hobart Half Marathon, and did 16K with Andy Allison on the bike on this awesome trail. You guys ever ran that pipeline trail down in Hobart before?
No.
I've never been.
Yeah, so good. If you're ever in town or any listeners out there going down, I think Hutchie's going down there next week, actually, and he said he's going to loop up with Andy to go on it. It's just a perfect kind of trail and just gradually goes along, and felt really good one day after the half marathon, averaged 4:31, so that was nice. Tuesday morning, I was still in Hobart, did 21K, got a bit of elevation in, which is unlike me, just around the Domain down there, so averaged 4:40s and still felt good. Came home Tuesday evening and just did 7K nice and easy when I was home on the Tuesday afternoon. Wednesday morning, I did 6 by 3 minutes with 2 minutes float. That felt good. Didn't really look at pace or anything. The coach just wanted me to go on stopwatch and pick a sandy trail and, don't look at splits or anything like that. So ended up in the end, though, 9.2K, 3:16 average. So I was pretty confident that Hobart wasn't hanging around in my legs, and I'd gotten over that with that session. Easy 7K in the afternoon at 4:40s, pretty hot as well. What did we, next day is Thursday morning, did 27K at 4:37s. Not sure why I went for 27K, Not sure about that. Medium long run's pretty, it's a bit bigger than I usually go for it. I have to look back. It feels like ages ago. And then 6K in the afternoon, 15K Friday morning, and I didn't go out Friday afternoon, just cancelled it. It was like 43 degrees and had 8K on the plan, and I just thought I'd do more trouble than good, and canned that one. And then Saturday, I had a bit of an interesting day, so the coach wanted me to do quarters in the morning. So I did that and didn't pull out for once. Remember the other week I was telling you boys how we think it's long on the grass track and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I took the wheel around. It's like 399 metres, like exactly 400. So I was pretty annoyed about that. And I'm like, oh, why am I always pulling out of these sessions? And it is heavy and stuff, but my coach has pretty much said, look, just instead of trying to hit 70 seconds and 40 seconds or whatever we put in the planner, just do it at kind of that effort and don't look at your watch. So every time I just hit my watch when I went past the 400 and 200 meter split. If people don't know, Deke's quarters is 400 hard with 200 float times 8. I just did it and didn't look at my watch the whole time. And then I just looked at the splits at the end and it was really even. I think my fastest 400 was 70, my slowest one was 72, and my floats were, rather 41 or 42, which is exactly what we wanted. So I finished quarters in 15:05, and you know, it was one of those. It was 44 degrees on Saturday, so we went at like 6 o'clock in the morning, 6:30, and it was. I was pretty positive that I didn't pull out of it for starters, and it felt reasonably controlled and was really even. Then in the afternoon, we had the local Echuca team triathlon. This happens every year this weekend in Jan, and we get a team in. One of my sponsors, FitMob, they put a team in every year, and we try and win it. And we're lucky enough to win it again, and the boys gave me about a minute 30 head start come the run leg, and I could kind of switch off a bit and put in a quick first K in about 3:05, I think, and then just jogged it in. But I've never raced in that kind of heat before in my life. It was 44 degrees that when they started, and even just doing strides and stuff before it, you could feel your feet just heating up on the road surface, and I was just sweating up an absolute storm by the end of it. But good fun. It's a really kind of tricky technical course, but you get to run past the crowd 3 or 4 times, so I don't have many opportunities to race in front of a hometown, so it's always good to chuck the racing flats on and give it a squirt. And then Sunday, 3 hour long run, which I spoke about last week. So did the first 24k with Tali Bird. You guys familiar with Tali? She's won a couple of AV races before and some pretty run for the kids and C2C and stuff like that. So she lives in Echuca, and she came along. She's been injured for a while, but she's back doing some work now and come along for the first 24K, which was just a really good way to pass the time. And, end up doing, 3 hours, exactly 40K, average 4:31 per K, and just got it done. It was quite enjoyable. I wasn't sure how it was going to go, and I think having someone there for the first half really made a massive difference. And then had a massive nap during the afternoon because we went out, we started that at 5:30 in the morning. Then just went out for an easy 5K at 5:16K pace, which was, haven't jogged that slow in a while, but it was really, really enjoyable just to get that second run in and move the legs around. So that was my week, and I think it was 193, 3 weeks to go to the Nobioka Marathon. Feeling good.
Good.
Do you run at 9 o'clock very often?
No, not really. Well, I had a first birthday party, one of my mates' his kid's birthday. It's the first time I've been to a first birthday party. It's showing where my life's heading a bit. But, went to that during the day and then got home and just went down for a nap. And that was about 4 p.m. And I think I woke up at 7:50 or something. And then, took me a while to wake up and then went for the jog. But it was nice. I enjoyed it. Dark, and it was still like 35 degrees or something. It's been shocking. But, it was nice. Liked it. Good week. And not a lot of marathon-specific stuff, but I'm kind of just not caring too much about that and just trying to get the work done and the mileage up and a bit of that kind of maybe old school traditional Australian kind of marathon build up with the quarters and the monofartleks. And I'm going to throw one marathon specific session in this week, and then we're just going to see what happens 2 weeks after.
Good attitude.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Bradley. Really appreciate those comments. Let's get on to this news, boys. Big one to come out of I think Runners Tribe put this on, and thanks for the support Runners Tribe show us every week by putting our show up on their website. But Matt Centrowicks and Nick Willis both coming down to Australia to run some track meets, which is some pretty big names, like Olympic gold medalists, and I think Nick Willis was third at world champ, sorry, I'm thinking. Pretty cool big names to be coming down. What are your thoughts?
We've always had some big names from the States come down. Like, it seems like every year maybe someone, or maybe not every year, but I remember, like, Galen Rupp coming out. Maybe not purely from the States, but, like, you get a good African now and then come out. It just, yeah, it looks good. I'm excited. I can't wait to see what happens.
Well, they'll run it out, like, trials and stuff, won't they? And then won't they just, like, push it along? Like, they don't care what position they're going to come?
Oh, I doubt they'll be allowed to run out trials.
No, they won't be allowed. They won't be allowed to.
Our trials are the national championships.
They're not allowed to run national champs.
No. They'll run Sydney Grand Prix and that sort of thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, there goes my theory. What do you think about it,
Brad? Oh, it's good. Hopefully, there's a fair bit of depth in Australian 1500 metre running at the moment, but hopefully having those boys there, it'll just, like, hopefully guys like Guzman, and it just pushes them along to actually, you know, have a big breakthrough and maybe go from sort of that 337, 338 to 335, so hopefully that's what will happen.
Yeah, like the Gregsons, the Geordie Williams, like all those kind of guys. Yeah. Like that's
it'll be huge,
loaded field.
Huge race.
Yeah.
Oh well, it'll be great. I can't wait. I think it'll be worth. I mean, for a running nerd, it'll be awesome. Anyway,
is that an Athletics Australia thing? Like, do they have like funding or budgets or whatever to pull these international names from overseas to build the publicity around the big events?
I think so, yeah. I think they would have a budget.
Wouldn't be a bad little email to get, would it? Like, America's winter, come over, run a few track races. No one really cares how you go because you're off-season.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know who pays for them to come out. I mean, I'm sure it fits in their plan, but they wouldn't do it if it didn't.
True. The other bit of news dropped yesterday. It was really hard to find this stuff. I think because it's good on school holidays, I can actually dig a bit deeper in this kind of stuff. But geez, I went down a rabbit hole today when I was trying to find some information here. Kenya announces their marathon team for the Commonwealth Games. And it's, well, there's one name on there, Kenneth Mungaru, who has won Gold Coast two of the last 3 years, the 44-year-old barber. You guys heard about this bloke before?
Yeah, I have actually.
Yeah, so he's there, which is good, because he kind of runs under 2:10 when he runs the Gold Coast and wins it, the marathon. But the other five names, the other two males and the other three females, really kind of, you know, I don't really want to, they're pretty quick, but they're kind of no big name Kenyans, and I can see why they're not getting their big names to come, because they're going to marathon majors. But, you know, yeah, kind of 2:35 PB for one of the Kenyan females, and she was 2:47 in her last marathon. You know, 2:30 for the other female, 2:27 for the third female, but, you know, hasn't really performed since 2014. So it seems like they've really sent a, C or D grade kind of team for the Comm Games, which is great for our Aussie hopes.
Yeah, I think when you look at that, you look at Lisa Waitman's got faster PB than those girls do. So she would go in, like, as a favourite ahead of them, especially where their form's at. Like, it's not till 2014. Lisa ran last year faster time by 2 minutes than these girls. So that's got to give you confidence.
Yeah, well, I think all three Australian girls would be, well-matched against these three Kenyan females. And even, like, one of the Kenyan males, I started counting up all the marathons he's run. This would be his 28th marathon. His best is 2:08, but it's from 2012, and it almost seems like he just travels around the world running marathons as his job, and just trying to chalk up as many as possible to get some prize money.
Yeah. Well, how do they even get selected? Like, do these guys nominate, or do they just quick randomly pick people, or what's the go?
Yeah, no, I read into that as well. So they had to nominate, and then Athletics Kenya were pretty disappointed with who nominated, so then they kind of left the window a bit longer, and then it kind of got to a stage where the Commonwealth Games needed to be notified about who was in the team, so they kind of had to put the hard word on the athletes, and then they still didn't receive too many nominations, but they were getting plenty of nominations for the World Half Marathon Champs in Valencia. So Jeffrey Conwara is going to run in that. So and then, of course, you've got Kipchoge going to London. And, kind of brings up a point. Like, I think you kind of mentioned something about it, Brad, about the relevance of the Commonwealth Games marathon for some of these countries.
Yeah, it's obviously great for the Aussies, and you can only race who turns up on the day, but it is a shame that some, you know, national federations obviously don't place a lot of value on a Commonwealth medal. Because it'd be really interesting to see where these Kenyans are actually ranked in their country, like for this calendar year. Because I'm guessing it would be well outside the top 100, wouldn't it? Like,
yeah, well, to put it in perspective, like Kenneth Mungaru, he actually ran Hong Kong Marathon last weekend. He won it, but he ran 2:13. And it's like, you know, if you're really serious about the Comm Games, you're not going to run a marathon 2-3 months before it.
Do you think it's a, like, obviously Australia has a really strong history of, like, in the Commonwealth Games, and I guess our runners aren't motivated by money maybe as much as what Kenyan runners are? Think that's part of it?
Oh, 100%. Completely different context. Like, they're doing it for their job and to survive over there.
You raised a good point, though, Bray. Is it better off having a half marathon at a Commonwealth Games, because then, you know, the top guys don't mind racing a half because they can recover in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, I didn't raise that point. Tim Hutchinson's, he's like a really acclaimed running journalist. He put that on Twitter to kind of say, like, is it, what did he say? I've got his tweet here. This thread is about whether championship marathons outside the Olympics are worth sustaining, or whether, because of the lack of relative credibility, should they be turned into half marathons? I think they should. So that was him saying that. So, yeah. Okay. But it's interesting the way that we look at it as our be-all and end-all event, and we kind of said that Valencia was kind of the leftover runners that didn't make the Comm Games last week for the Australian team, whereas in Kenya that's almost flipped, and they're, yeah, well, the three guys, I think one's 44, the other one's 40, and the other one's 39. Like, their age is saying they're kind of well past their prime.
Yeah, you wouldn't hear about, like, Liam Adams going, nah, forget Comm Games, I'm going to do Tokyo or something like that. It's just, it's not how it is in Australia. And I think it's because everyone has other jobs. Oh, well, nearly everyone works outside of that. So they're, like, I think obviously there's a love for the running for the country. That's basically been ingrained in us since very early on. Like, you run for the singlet, but then, like, you look at, say, at the ladies, Lisa, it works full time. Jess is a physio. I'm not sure how often she works. And Virginia Malone is a teacher. So they've got an income. They don't need to go to these other marathons and win a grand here or there like the Kenyans do. It changes their life.
Yeah, and I think if they actually, it can be a breakthrough for an Australian as well if you perform at a Commonwealth Games. Like, if you can win a gold medal and market yourself the right way at a home Commonwealth Games, it's almost that situation where you might not have to work. Whereas, going and chasing prize money and coming eighth at London Marathon or something like that, you might get a bit of prize money, but it's not going to help your profile as much as winning a gold medal in a Comm Games in Australia.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorted. I think they do it for their life.
Mm.
And, like, it means a lot to our runners as well, but I think the context is different. They do it for their singlet, they do it for representing their country, and that's a bit different.
Yeah, 100%. It's exciting for our athletes, though, because I'm really excited about the genuine concept that, yeah, any one of those females or males could be on the podium.
Yeah, it will be good. I'm still thinking about going up and watching it.
Yeah, I'm thinking about doing a road trip as well. We should see if someone can fund us to go to a live podcast or something up there. That'd be good fun.
Yeah, righto.
Yeah. Hey, Bekele's announced he's heading to London's announced that Kenenisa Bekele's also going to be in the marathon with Kipchoge and Mo Farah. That's shaping up to be a good race, Brad. What do you reckon?
Yeah, hopefully he does a bit better than Berlin.
Yeah. He's a bit up and down, isn't he?
Yeah, he hasn't had he's very hit and miss, that's for sure.
I reckon they wasted their all the hype and the build up on Berlin for it to kind of fizzle out as it did. And so no one's gonna get that excited for this one.
Yeah, he hasn't run one since Berlin, though, has he? Because he went through that stage where he was, like, running Dubai and, like, London, and then he wanted to run the World Champs. Like, remember he got a bit hungry and was running a bit more than two marathons a year at one stage, whereas he's kind of gone a bit quiet lately.
Yeah, the only reason I reckon Bekele might run well, because remember there was a lot of criticism after Berlin trying to compare, I guess, Kipchoge to Bekele, and the comparison was that Kipchoge, like, trains like a marathoner and does basically dots his I's and crosses his T's, where I think people were saying that Bekele wasn't quite, you know, training properly. So maybe he might have read that, got, you know, taken that feedback on board and maybe is, you know, a bit more serious about it.
Yeah, man, imagine if he comes out. Yeah, remember it was his.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, it was his manager. You were chilling with him at the lobby in Berlin, remember? He came out and slammed him, said he was, like, lazy and unprofessional in his approach to training and stuff like that. Don't quote me on any of that stuff, though.
No, it wasn't that he was lazy. It was that he focused his attention on his work rather than his training. His manager, or his agent manager basically said, this can't continue.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, imagine if he just has just been living in a bunker like a monk for the last 6 months and comes out and runs 2:02:30 or something.
Yeah.
I'll still watch it. There's more things to watch now.
Crosses the line, giving the bird to, like, the cameras and stuff.
Yeah.
Right, that could be good. Hey, the last bit of news this week, Hunter Track Classic in the and the Canberra track meet, and I've got a bit of audio with Dave Robbo, which we're going to cut to now, and it's... Yeah, it's actually good to talk to someone who was there and he actually knows a whole stack about it, and you can listen to that right now. All right, we've got Dave Robbo joining us this week for the Inside Running Podcast. We've fresh off his 250th park run on the weekend and his big gig at the Newcastle Hunter Track Classic. Thanks, mate.
No, pleasure to get on here, mate, and love the show. It's great to have a chat.
Yeah, well, we wanted to get you on because you were pretty much there and front and center and calling all the action at the Hunter Track Classic on the weekend, so we thought instead of having us three boys flick through the results and try to pick up a few stories from it, we thought we'd get the expert on.
Well, mate, I'll try my best, but turned out it'd be a great meet for the distance runners, Brady, which will be a nice thing for your listeners and for you guys. And, it was interesting to see some of the athletes mixing up their race distances, I guess, which happens early on in the season. But probably the standout was the final event of the night in that women's 5,000 metres when Lyndon Hall, who, you know, she plies her trade over 1,500 metres. Well, she came out and absolutely smashed it. And they went through, you know, first K, only a wipe slower than 3-minute pace. And they didn't slow much for the first 3Ks. She ended up finishing in 15:18, 35-second PB. She was the performance of the meet, Commonwealth Games A qualifier, just blew them out of the water. There was a pack of three, Lyndon, Emily Brickacek, and Lissy Duncan, all working together. Then it sort of split up in the last 1,500 or so. But, yeah, great race, and she's obviously a talented runner, and that's going to give her a heap of confidence for the shorter distance as she moves down. Spare a thought for Emily Brickacek, who was desperate to get that Commonwealth Games B qualifier. You've had her on the show.
Yep.
She's coming back, as we know, and she ran a 15:46, so she was only a second and a bit outside that B qualifier, but, you know, still a great run from her. And Lissy Duncan, a similar sort of story, coming back from a long period off with injury. She was only a little bit behind, 15:52 PB for her, so, yeah, that was a great way to finish the night.
Pretty loaded 5K too, isn't it? Like three pretty significant dominant female distance runners there.
Certainly is, mate. Yeah, pretty handy. And that's the thing, unusual maybe to see 1,500 metre runners stepping up in the same race like that, but it made for a good race. And then there was kind of a second pack behind that with some youngsters having a good crack too. So, yeah, it was good to see and nice to finish off the night. Conditions were pretty good. They got the pick of the conditions. Wind had settled down by then. And apart from a few mozzies blowing around, it was prime.
What about Lyndon Hall? Any intention what she's going to do at Gold Coast? Like, because she's been known as a 1500 meter performer, but 15:18, like that's a decent time and could, nearly sneak in for a medal.
It sure is. Yeah. Well, she didn't sniff at it. I tried to get a bite out of her, and she said no, it's back to 1500. That'll be where it is, and there'll be a progression eventually to the 5000, but she reckons it's not going to happen just yet. So whether she reconsiders that with reflecting on that performance a bit more from the weekend. But, yeah, at the moment she said she's 1,500 for Gold Coast, so we'll wait and see, and that might open up some spots for other girls in the 5K. But yeah, you wouldn't think she'd do too bad if she did have a crack at the Gold Coast, you know?
That's it. Hey, men's 1500 metres, a couple of breakthrough theirs as well.
Well, that was an interesting one too. So you had the opposite going on there with Morgan McDonald, who is a 5000 runner, stepping down to the 1500, and he blitzed them as well with a PB. He's run a 355 mile, so he probably has a 1500 PB on the way to that. But yeah, 339.14 he ended up with. He didn't have it all his own way. He had to come back from behind with about 200 or 300 to go. He found himself in about third spot, but James Hansen came through in second, 339.56 to be the fastest Taswegian over the distance, which is a great run from him, another PB. And Tommy Forthorpe, 340 in third place. So yeah, it's a great race, that men's 1500. That was the second last race of the night. Again, they had pretty good conditions, they were some pretty hungry dogs in there to try and get up the front. But Morgan McDonald, with the big hair and the big beard, the boy from the Wisconsin Badgers. I kept wanting to yell out, "Go Beavers!" But I knew that wasn't the right thing. He told me at the end, it's the Badgers.
And
so, he's in good form.
Any intentions for him as well then? So like, yeah, went to the world champs in the 5K, but is he going to drop down to the 15, or what's he thinking?
Yeah, similar to Lyndon, I think staying true to the pet event for the time being, very happy to get, you know, that time on the board and show the form that he's in. That was his first race since the world champs in London in the 5000 last year, so he was happy just to shake it out like that, and he'll be pretty hungry to secure that 5000 spot. And there's about six or seven blokes that'll be gunning for that at Nationals. So that'll be a humdinger, that race at Nationals on the Gold Coast in the men's 5000.
Yeah, sure. We'll watch this space. That's going to be very exciting to watch that one. And especially with the 10K trials out of the way, so like the 5K guys or the 10K guys can drop down and have a good crack.
Yep, for sure.
Hey, Paige Campbell was probably the other standout performer on the night. Do you want to tell us a bit about her?
Yeah, she came across the line. She was big smile ear to ear, pumping her fists, and rounded out a fantastic race for her, 9:49.60, which is the sixth all-time fastest Aussie in the women's 3000 steeplechase, and she's got herself a Commonwealth Games B qualifier, and she was thrilled with that run. She's knocked off Vic Mitchell, Olympic steeplechase runner, and we know the class that Victoria has. So Vic was second in 9:53, and then Charlotte Wilson from Victoria, 9:55. Also a Commonwealth Games B qualifier, and that's the ninth all-time fastest Aussie. So, you know, pretty handy event when you've got those sorts of movers in the rankings. And Paige was, she was thrilled. I managed to bump into her on Sunday morning around Newcastle going for her long run, and, she was still buzzing. So great to see, and you know, she might have just bought her ticket on the Comm Games team.
Yeah, and the vibe of the event, mate, like good crowds and like, yeah, obviously there's some pretty good results when you flick through the rankings, and some big breakthroughs there.
Yeah, it was, and it just builds. And one of the things that, you know, it's sort of been known as the athletes meet over the years, they try and go that extra mile to make the athletes feel loved and welcome and get everything that they need. And a couple of little things that are nice, we get the crowd onto the track basically for the last hour for those distance runs. Once the sprints are all done, the crowd's down there from lane four on the home straight cheering them on, and all the athletes will say how much of a buzz that gives them. So, that's a real thrill. And, yeah, it's a nice, you know, I guess, a country kind of meet, and not a huge crowd, mate, but a pretty keen crowd. And as I said, they can get involved and get out there. Some of the crowd had been out there, you know, watching the shot putters do their thing earlier in the night too. So a good buzz, and it was a great buzz around town over the whole weekend.
Yeah, beautiful. And just to finish off with Newcastle, the men's 5K, that was pretty close race, like having, you know, probably not breakthrough kind of races under 14 minutes, but some kind of next tier guys having some really good runs running low 14s.
Yeah, young guys coming through. You've got established marathoners coming down.
Yeah.
Jack Colreby came fourth.
Brad Milosevic 14:13. Was there, yeah.
Milosevic, he was pumped. That's a PB for him, 14:08. And Ed Goddard, UTS North, he had a good run at Zatopek, and 14:07 for him for a PB. And he and Brad Milosevic worked together in the closing stages there and held on. And you're right, mate. It was a good race, a good honest race, and PBs, you know, throughout the field. So that's what you want to see with the runners. And they were cashing in on pretty good conditions. They were pretty spent by the end. There's a few photos going up
of them all
lying on their backs at the finish line, sucking in the air. But it was great to see, and we you know, it's parkrun day, as your listeners will know, Saturday. So Saturday morning we started with the parkrun, and we finished with a couple of parkrun distances on the track. So it was very nice.
Yeah, cool. Let's move to Canberra. The big story coming out of there would be our man Sean Crichton breaking the Australian record, wouldn't it?
That's how it has to be, mate. I couldn't believe it last night. I was just tucking into bed. Actually, my wife said, she said, turn the phone off. She's trying to get to sleep. And I was like, I can't believe this. I think I've just seen Sean Crichton's run 8:58 to take the men's Australian 50-year-old 3,000 record. He's getting a bit greedy, I think, Brady, to add to his 5,000 and his 10,000 records, and obviously his steeplechase opens record from years ago. Yeah. But a fantastic run from him.
He's unbelievable. Like, and even just following him on Strava, like exactly what he said in Brad's interview, he doesn't do a lot of work at race pace. He kind of, a lot of work at, 5:10, 5:20 a kilometre, and then just comes out and just can click into 2:58 pace and hold it.
Yeah, it does. And so we had the previous record set by Keith Bateman. I think it was 8:59.62. And so he knew, he would have known he had to knock that off. And I think he might have been paced by Philo Saunders looking at the results, but he's knocked that off. But the interesting thing for him, those records don't get easier as he gets older. Keith Bateman's got them all in the 55 age group, and they're all actually harder than the 50 age group. So he's knocking them off now, but he knows he's got his work cut out to keep up with Keith over the coming years.
Yeah, and I read somewhere 33-second last 200. I think he was a bit behind time, and he had to pull it out. So 50-plus running the 33-200-metre split's not bad.
Not bad at all, not bad at all. And then Jordan Gusman was on a couple of races before that, I think, too. Brady ran another 3:38 in the 1,500 metres. That's his second in a week. And the word I'm getting is he's got a race in a couple of weeks at sea level, and that's where it's all going to happen. We might see a big qualifier there for him. So, yeah, it's good to see the crew from Canberra carving it up as well.
Yeah, because every time you refresh the results with Jordan Gusman, it's just another 3:38, 3:39 in a kind of smallish meet, and you're just waiting for that big one to come out.
Yeah, well, that one in Canberra, that was basically on his own as a time trial to round out that weekend meet down there. So, he's in. I reckon he's got something pretty special coming through, and it's brewing up beautifully, mate. Less than a month now till the Nationals up at the Gold Coast, and then we'll see who gets on that team for the Comm Games.
Yeah, I'm liking the hype around. There's so many events, I think, the hype's around as well. Like, you're not really sure who's going to be punching their ticket. So it's good in anticipation. And, yeah, looking forward to getting you on the show in a bit of a lead-up and telling us all about what's happened on the track.
Yeah, cheers, mate. Well, yeah, and then the shout, we don't have long to wait, because next weekend the ACT champs are on. And across all events, that's going to be huge as well. That's basically like a track classic over 3 days there, and a lot of the big players in track and field will be there, and especially in the distance run. So, yeah, that's going to be pretty exciting, and we'll keep following it over the summer.
And they've got a good reputation, that track, doesn't it? Isn't it, like, fast? It's good surface and pretty new and stuff?
Mondo track. Benny Offerins was in charge of Athletics ACT there for a couple of years. He would famously get out and water it. He's a 400-metre runner. Apparently, to keep the Mondos in shape and not burning out, you've got to keep the water up to them. So he'd be out there watering the track. So it's in good nick. It's a good conditions there with the winds and stuff for the sprinters generally, and then later on for the distance runners. So a little bit of altitude as well up there at Canberra, but yeah, pretty famously a fast track. And so I reckon we'll see some more qualifiers and some pretty good performances to talk about from next weekend.
Beautiful, Robbo. Thanks for filling us in here on the podcast, and yeah, thanks for giving us some time again.
Pleasure, Brady. Keep it going, mate, and happy running.
Thanks, mate. All right. Listener question. This one came in from Stephen Udy. You ready, boys? Because I'm going to have to... I'll probably struggle reading this out, because you always ask me what was the actual question after I read these out most weeks. So just start listening pretty carefully, because there's a bit to this one.
I'll read it too.
Yeah, it's also on the screen. All right, so when you boys are coaching a runner for a PB in a marathon, how do you ultimately come up with a goal time or goal pace after a productive marathon-specific training block? For example, do you have any key sessions or workouts you would prescribe as an accurate predictor of marathon performance, such as Diddick 3x5Ks?
Okay.
Do we go to Supercoach first, Brad, and see what he's got to say?
Yeah, I reckon Moose will have this covered.
Yeah, well, this is a good question, actually.
This is a
great
question.
It is a good question, and I'm probably going to disappoint him with my answer, because I'm not going to give him some magic number. But basically, the way that, like, the question is when you're coaching a runner for a PB in the mountain. So if I was coaching a runner, and I'll use the example of a fella that I had running down at Hobart Marathon this year. So Marcus had started, well, I started working with Marcus, I reckon, about 5 months ago, and he'd come off a pretty horrible experience at Perth. He had a shit day, and he was a little bit almost intimidated by the marathon. He'd always done triathlon training, and he wanted something different, a little bit more specific. So we got him into a specific stage about 8 weeks out, and it was very hard to work out a pace for the sessions that we were doing. So I really wanted to monitor it closely as he did the sessions, how he was feeling during them, how his pace was dropping. And Brad mentioned it earlier in the podcast, how he's feeling at the end of the workouts. So you could give, for instance, a traditional marathon workout might be 16K at predicted marathon pace, right? So for about 3 years, I was going out and stinging myself at predicted marathon pace of 2:20. And I would finish these 16K runs. I'd average 3:20, and I would be absolutely cooked. It was like doing a race. That's how spent I was at the end. And I would think, oh, yeah, but I got 3:20. I can do it. I can run 3:20. I mean, 2:20 for the marathon now. And there was not a chance that I could. I wasn't in that shape. There's a difference in how you're feeling after it. So if I'm going to get back to the specific question, how do I come up with a goal time or goal pace? Well, I'll have an idea based on how he's gone throughout the 8 weeks of his specific block. So it's not one or two workouts that he's done. It's a general collective feel of how he's been handling all of the workouts throughout. And that's more important than looking at one workout going, geez, he did that well, or looking at one going, oh, he really fell off the pace in that one. Maybe that's too fast for the marathon for him. It's a collective feel based on how he's gone. And look, some guys are trainers. Some guys can do it no worries in training and have a struggle on the day. Other guys have terrible workouts, and then they get to the day and their adrenaline kicks in and they're really good races. So it's different for everybody. So Marcus, for instance, during his marathon build-up, we adjusted his pace from aiming at running about – I'd subscribe him or some workouts at 4-minute pace as his predicted pace. And after about 3 weeks of those workouts, we worked out that might have been a little sharp for him because he was handling it till about 3/4 and then he would start to fall off later, and it was consistent through the sessions. So we dropped that out to about 4:05 to 4:10. I gave him a little bit of a window where he could assess it based on the heat and where he was running and the trails. And he nailed the workouts, but we still weren't fully confident because it was the first time that he's ever done this kind of training block, so we didn't really know how it was going to go. And he ended up averaging 4:09s running a PB for the marathon. And so now we kind of know, after a little bit more experience, we know what sort of pace we're looking at for Marcus. And he was very even. He ran even splits. I encouraged him to take his watch off because the other part of this question is coming up with a goal time. For me, I don't like to give an athlete a goal time because it limits them. If I say, I reckon it'd be a great result if you ran 15 minutes for a 5K. Yet they go out there and they're on 15-minute pace and they're thinking, shit, I'm really on my limit right now. When if I said, I think you could run 14:50, in their head, they're like, okay, I can go faster, I can go faster. I hate to give like that. I just want them to go out and run well, listen to their body more, and through training they'll work out what the certain feel is they're looking for rather than what the paces are. So there's three answers to that question. I don't like to give them a goal time or goal pace. I want to get them to go by feel rather than pace. There's no specific workout. It's rather finding a collection of results from workouts and feedback from the runner during workouts. That's my answer.
Yeah, you tiptoed around a bit, didn't you? You kind of covered all bases, which was good, and I'd expect that from you. Brad, you got something?
A little bit. I think Julian touched on it with the whole, like, it depends on your training philosophy as well. So I guess there's a move now to doing those big marathon-specific sessions, like your 5x5K with 1K float. And, I guess the idea of that is to try and run the 5Ks around marathon pace. But I think you need to finish that session still feeling strong. So as Julian said, if you're just able to hit those paces, but you're cooked, because that's a 30K session, if you're cooked at the end of it, the times you're hitting for those 5Ks is probably not realistic to hold for the marathon. But if you're controlled and feel like you could almost do another rep, that's the key, I think, is having more there at the end of those sessions. But then guys like Sean Crichton and Mona, they would have never done those longer sessions to get a gauge. And so I remember chatting to Sean and asking him a similar question. How did you know what you could run for a marathon? And his biggest sort of session used to be a 10-mile tempo. And they used to do that around West Basin, so around the Lake Burley Griffin. And it's not flat, it's bike path, but it has a few undulations. And he used to run that at goal marathon pace. But I guess with him, he was always training in fourth gear. So he was confident that if he could run 10 miles at marathon pace and I guess not be completely cooked, he could probably hold that for the full marathon. The other thing that I think works quite well are, and I don't use them a lot, but some of those calculators are actually pretty good, especially if you've got a half marathon time and you're doing the training of a marathoner. I think that they're reasonable, like within a minute or two. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah. My thought, it depends so much on context and how long you've been running for and what kind of mileage you've been hitting and how many marathons and stuff like that you've ran. But I have found, and this is just what's worked for me, and some people won't agree, but the 5x5K and the 10K float into 20K at goal marathon pace and finish both of those sessions feeling like you could push on if you had to, have been pretty much whatever I hit them in training, what average I can hit that last 20K for and what average I hit the 5x5K in has been exactly the same pace as I've averaged the marathons in both my build-ups for Berlin in the last 2 years. I've used that same session for Chris Armstrong, pretty experienced marathoner over in Shepparton, has run quite a few, had a big breakthrough this year when he ran 2:48 at Melbourne, and we did the same thing. He did that same 10K float into 20K marathon pace and, yeah, averaged 4:01s when he did that. I've just got his Strava up now. And then when he did his 5x5K about 3 or 4 weeks out from Melbourne, he averaged 3:59s and then, yeah, went to Melbourne and averaged 3:58. So I've found that those sessions work for some people I've worked with and have worked for me as well. I also think they're good sessions where you can practice nutrition. And also, like, I really like it when the people I work with have heart rate monitors as well. So, yeah, just looking at Chris's sessions there, he's averaged 164 beats per minute when he's doing those sessions. So kind of right at that, you know, you're not blowing super hard, but you're working along at that sustained pace, which you can hopefully hold for the last 12K. So that'd be my answer. Like, but it's, you know, don't go out there and do 10K float into 20K hard if you've never run a marathon before. That's not going to work for everyone. You've got to be pretty experienced to try that one. But I think that's a good indication that if you can hold that, it's going to be something near your pace for the marathon come race day.
Okay. I think we all had different answers. It's good.
Yeah, I think that's good. Moose on the loose before we finish up. Just be careful this week, Julian. I don't want too many emails rolling in a day after this podcast goes out this week.
Well, should be pretty straightforward this week, unless you're one of these bandits out there, I guess, that I'm going to get into. And I reckon I'm going to have a lot of supporters on this one, because this has been going on forever, and no one likes this. No, not a single person enjoys this. But it's been happening for like since the dawn of time. So there hasn't been anything that recent that's really annoyed me. I think probably the example I'll use was that I was out on a run up at Falls Creek. Bree actually on the bike next to me, jogging along out at Langford's Gap on a, no one else was out there, it was just us. Coming, so we're probably like 15K from the closest house, 10K from a car. One lady jogging towards us. I thought, oh, wow, that's cool. See someone else out here. And then, like, assuming she thinks the same thing, oh, these guys, similar interests, probably happy to see someone else out here. Let's give them a smile and a wave, Brie. Look up, try to get some eye contact, even raise the hand in a waving motion. And the lady, like, total bitch face, look the other way, eyes down, avoidance. And we jog past and think, look at each other and go, what the hell? Like, we're fighting the same battle, us runners. We sympathize with each other. We recognize the struggle. We're out there on a trail. It was hot. We're both sort of battling along. Like, smile at each other. It should happen. I get that if you're at the tan and there's 50,000 people running past, the only bloke smiling at the girls is Brad. But there's...
Last is own joke.
It's a good joke. But there's not, like, you got to... If you're out in the bush and someone's coming along, let's just make it less awkward by having a quick, hey, g'day, how you going? Smiling, good afternoon, good morning. Even if you're working pretty hard out there, quick little raise of the hand to say g'day. Like, this is a common one. And it does piss me off. Lately, when they go past and they don't say anything, they ignore me, I'll say it a bit louder as they go past. Yeah, good, thanks. How about yourself?
Yeah.
Just so they know that I've said g'day to them and they've ignored me and they feel, oh, maybe he was trying to talk to me. Maybe I should have smiled at him when he looked at me or maybe I should have waved back at him. So it gets known that I've recognized that they've ignored me as I went past. Surely you boys agree with me there.
Oh, mate, small town, we all say g'day to each other up here, and I notice it when I go away from Echuca, Moama to a bigger town that, you're almost looking at people and smiling and say good morning, and then they almost look at you like starstruck about, like, well, not starstruck, but just shocked, like, why are you talking to me? Like, it does my head in as well.
It's different, like, on a popular trail. I get it, like, you can't say hello to everyone, but if you're out in the, like, somewhere random like that, like in Echuca or out in the bush in Ballarat, like, it's so bizarre for someone not to acknowledge your presence as you go past on a tiny single track.
Mm. Yep, I'm with you. And, yeah, as you said, we're all battling out there ourselves, so just a quick g'day would be fantastic.
Yeah, everyone's happy with that.
Yeah, it's good. Hey, Brad, tell us about this week's interviewee. Haven't conducted the interview yet, but we'll just talk it up anyway. Go for it.
Yeah, so this week we've got Chris Hamer. So he's going to be running the marathon at the Comm Games, and we have chatted about him on previous podcasts, and he was a great junior athlete, went to World Junior Cross, won a couple of Aussie titles under 20s, was actually selected for the 2014 Comm Games in the 10,000 metres, and had to pull out and have surgery. And so, yeah, we're basically going to chat to him, I guess, about the heartbreak of 2014, the decision to move to the marathon, and then we'll get into a bit of nitty-gritty about his prep for Amsterdam Marathon, the challenges he's found from going from being a 10K runner to a marathoner, and probably discuss his prep for Comm Games. And I'll actually ask him that question as well, about, you know, you never run a marathon before. What did you do in training that gave you the idea that you could run, you know, 2:13? So I'll ask him that.
Because there's also that rule, isn't it, like it's your half marathon plus 7. Is that a general rule, Julian? You'd know better than us.
Oh, that's a Monteghetti rule.
Is it?
That one, I reckon. Yeah.
Straight from the great man himself.
I reckon that's the rule, yeah.
Sean likes those rules too, so the 10K is double your 5 and add a minute.
I've heard of that one too.
So that's what we'll be chatting. So I'm having a run with him on Wednesday and have him over for breakfast. I'm really looking forward to that chat.
Yeah. Did you get that link I sent you, that ABC interview he did the other day?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
You'll do a much better job than that one, I reckon.
I'll try.
Yeah. That was going to mainstream media, though. This one's going to all the running legends out there, so a bit of a different audience.
Yeah. That'd be good.
All right, we're done. Thanks, boys, for your time again. Hey, thanks for last week. I asked a few people if they had some spare time to help out the show to send me an email, and I was absolutely blown away by the response I got. If I haven't written back to you individually yet, I'm getting there, just trying to sort through the emails as they're coming in. But thanks to Ross Pentland, who emailed in about, I reckon he listened to the show the minute it went up to iTunes and then shot me an email straight away. So he prepared the show notes for Runner's Tribe last weekend, and I'm just doing a bit of talking with some of the overqualified emailers and listeners that wrote in, trying to build a bit of a team around Inside Running. And yeah, thanks for all those people who showed their support of the show and contacted me last week. We'll be back next week with another show, and yeah, happy running. What's on this week, boys? What do you got? Julian's racing. Brad, what are you doing?
What do I have? Got a hilly tempo tomorrow. 4x4K later in the week, and then a long run with 5K at marathon pace at the end. So, yeah, that's it for me.
It's tough. Anything amazing happening in your life, Julian?
No, I got work to do.
Hey, I'm going to do that treadmill test tomorrow, that one from Dane Verway, so I'll report on that next week. 2.5 hours on the treadmill. I'm gearing up for that tomorrow.
Oh, what the fuck?
Yeah, Eddie. Whoa, it's intense too, like they're pricking my finger every 15 minutes and chucking the mask on to see how much glucose I'm burning, and yeah, it sounds real legit. Blood test before and after, weight measuring, weight in and out. This is going to be like, I'm going to be a massive lab rat.
You're going to fuck around with this 3 weeks before your marathon.
Yeah, well, I don't want to stuff up another marathon, mate. It happens every time I race.
Oh, mate, this is perfect. Like, you were, the whole... like, reason it was so good for you is because you didn't think about all this shit. And it just, this ain't a good...
This is the nutrition.
I was all about you doing this month of, like, not, like, where you don't stress about the little things and you just, you get there without as much worry, and now you're doing the opposite.
No.
Save it for Moose on the Loose next week.
The whole purpose of this marathon was to have a positive experience and not fall apart the last 6K. And I reckon a big reason I fall apart is because I stuff up my nutrition. So I actually want to know what these guys can tell me about what I need to practice.
Okay.
Yeah, that is well justified. Yeah, I can't just keep falling. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to seeing how much pasta I need to eat before and how much I sweat and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, 2.5 hours on the treadmill is going to do me head in.
Yeah, you probably get injured from it too.
Yeah, I did say I booked in for treatment on the Thursday afterwards. So, yeah, my coach did say that. Make sure you got a brand new pair of shoes. And luckily, I have been saving those ones you sent me last week. They're still in the box, ready to go for tomorrow.
Nice. Good stuff.
All right, boys. Thanks again. We'll talk next week. Enjoy this episode. Listen, what are we talking about? Interview with Chris Hamer. Thanks, guys. Bye.
We're here with our latest guest for Inside Running, Mr. Chris Hamer. Congratulations on your recent selection for the Commonwealth Games Marathon.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, good to be here.
I know there's a lot of people in the running community that are really excited to see your selection, especially based on the fact that, I guess, 4 years ago you were selected to run the 10K and had to pull out through injury, and in recent times unlucky to make World Cross. So, I know a lot of people are really excited about this selection. Where were you when you found out you'd made the team?
I was actually just at work, so I was sitting at my desk and I got a call from Craig Hilliard. Just said, yeah, I've made the team. I still wasn't like 100% convinced I'd actually made it because I heard something about there's an athlete's cap. I think 72 athletes, so I wasn't 100% sure whether that was dependent on the cap or not. But yeah, I found out that 100% in, so yeah, I was pretty excited. Didn't do much work for the rest of the day and... yeah.
And who did you call first up when you found out you'd made it?
I called my wife first, so I let her know, obviously. And then called my old man, woke him up. He's living overseas at the moment. Woke him up to tell him. So, It's good.
So we will talk about, I guess, your prep for Amsterdam, which is where you ran your debut. You ran 2:13:32, which qualified you for the Com Games. So we'll chat about that, and also, I guess, your prep
for the upcoming Commonwealth Games. But before that, maybe, I guess, introduce yourself with your PBs and how you got into running.
Yeah, okay. How did I get into running? Well, I did a little athletics for a while, just down at Box Hill Track. My old man and his brothers, they all did sort of athletics to some degree when they were growing up. They were all Box Hill as well, so they grew up in Box Hill. I grew up in Box Hill. Went down to Box Hill Track, did a bit of running there, got involved with the group, did a bit of running at high school as well. Like, we had a cross country and athletics team, and just sort of went from there. So I think probably in high school started taking it pretty seriously, and then just kept going from there.
Yeah. And who was coaching you at that time?
So my coach was a guy called Wes Windsor, just down at Box Hill Track. A really good coach, really good junior coach. He coached a number of guys. As if you got Andrew White, he's one of my main training partners. Sam Hassett, people might not remember him. He was sort of a really good junior, and then I think transitioned to footy sort of later on.
Yeah.
Hayley Tomlinson, she was a great runner as well. Really good junior. So we had a pretty good team. Great fun to train with.
And so doing some research for this, it looks like you had some pretty good success as a junior. You're first in the under-20s cross country in 2006 and 2007, and went into World Junior Cross in 2007 as well.
Yep.
Then what prompted your move to Canberra?
I had some great success as a junior. I think particularly the cross country sort of things. I was never that good at track, but those longer distances, particularly with the hilly courses, it sort of suited me a little bit more. I guess the move to Canberra, it was actually my old coach, Wes. He actually said, "Look, you're running well. I think you can do a lot better." He was actually really impressed with Dick, and I think he had some sort of relationship with him in the past. They'd worked together at some stage, and he actually suggested, "Yeah, look, I think you should move to Canberra and get coached by Dick Telford." So I remember one day sitting at work about 7 p.m. at night, and I called up Dick, and I said, what do you think about coaching? And he said, only if you come to Canberra. So I thought, all right, and that was pretty much it. So a couple of months later, moved to Canberra and got a job, and yeah.
Well, two things for me that stand out of that is one, there's not many coaches that would be willing to give up such a quality athlete. So it obviously says a lot about your junior coach.
I'm really grateful for that as well, because, Wes is just a great guy. If anyone knows him, he's really passionate about sport. He's actually a brilliant coach himself. But for him to sort of suggest that, he thought I'd be able to get the best out of myself somewhere else was really, I guess, selfless in a way. I'm really grateful for it.
And then the other thing for me is obviously the level of dedication that you have to be able to sort of just uproot, bring you and your wife to like relocate purely for your running. And it's great now to knowing what you've now achieved, that those sacrifices and level of commitment have paid off.
Yeah, it certainly has. I guess it's, it is a sacrifice. It's not too far back to Melbourne, 7 hour drive every now and then. But once you sort of lived in Canberra for a little while, it's very hard to go anywhere else. I find it's just a great place. It's the best running in Australia, best running trails, best, we've got Stromlo, track. I mean, I could go for about 20...
Mulligan's Flat, as you experienced this morning.
There's probably about 20 trails I could name, which would be better than anything in Melbourne. So it's really just a great place, So I'm loving it.
All right, so obviously some junior success, but you've had a lot of setbacks in your career. And looking back, it seems to have always been that you'd have a major breakthrough and then miss a year or two with injury, come back stronger than ever, and then have another breakthrough. So some of those examples, I remember actually racing with you in Zatopek 2011, and that was the first time you'd broken 30 minutes on the track, and then you broke 14 minutes for 5K a couple of months later, and then sort of went missing for a year or two with injury, then came back, got yourself fit in 2013 and ran 28:18 on the track, which qualified you for the last Comm Games, got selected for Comm Games, then got injured, and now you've had surgery, a couple of surgeries, and now you've come back and had a blinder with a 2:13:32 marathon to qualify for this Comm Games. So I guess what my question is, with all of these setbacks, one, did you ever think about giving it away, and two, how did you, overcome all of these setbacks, and what motivated you to keep coming back?
Good questions. I think a lot of the time with my injuries, I sort of got myself into a bit of trouble just pushing too hard. Like, when you have a breakthrough, you get really pumped up and you sort of just want to go out and, train the house down, things like that. So to be honest, I probably only got myself to blame for a lot of those setbacks. I've always been motivated to run. I guess I'm pretty passionate about it. I love doing it. I just love, you know, just going out, running in the bush, whatever. So I've never really sort of not wanted to run. I guess the most recent surgery on my Achilles, actually, I sort of did start to think about, you know, whether or not I'd actually get back from it, because the surgeon was telling me, you know, 3 months until you'd be back running. At about 9 months, I still hadn't done any running. I was still in a lot of pain, and I just thought, you know, I can't see myself getting back. But, you know, eventually I managed to sort of get to the point where I can manage that injury and keep running. So, I mean, I guess that was good. Coming back from injuries,
Where's your... So when you have a major injury or a major distance, or I guess the last Comm Games, having to pull out of it, where's your headspace at in terms of when you know you can't run for 6 months to a year with like the Achilles surgery, do you try to avoid any athletics talk, or do you basically distance yourself from the sport completely? Or how do you cope with, during those periods?
I probably do that without actually sort of actively trying to, if that makes sense. So I guess because I've got a job and, you know, I've got other things to sort of keep myself busy, it's not too much of a problem. That's probably the way it sort of panned out without really trying to do that.
And how long, so after these, so when you had the double lots of surgery, how long did it take to come back from that?
So I had a couple on the navicular in about 2009, and that, again, the surgeon said about, you know, between 6 and 12 weeks before you're back running. That was a whole year. The recent Achilles surgery has been fairly similar. I think every time a surgeon tells you that 3 months, you just got to triple it.
But it was slow jogging initially. Like, was it?
Heaps and heaps of like exercises first, and then I even started with walking just to sort of get some sort of fitness and some sort of conditioning in the legs. A bit of jogging, bit of running. I'm the type of guy who's all or nothing. So when I'm running, I'm all in. When I'm not running, I'm not doing anything. So once I was comfortable running again, I was pretty much back doing as good as I could.
And out of all of these setbacks, have there been any positives out of it? Whether it be, are there things that you are doing now that you never used to do that's potentially keeping you in one piece, or even mentally you've got something out of all of these setbacks?
Some of the injuries can be a blessing in disguise to some extent. I've actually started working with a guy at the Brumbies, Ben Serple, who's their strength and conditioning, well, I think he's director of athletic performance or something like that, but he helped me with my rehab after the Achilles surgery, and we do a lot of stuff now in terms of injury prevention, so just looking at transferring loads from those lower limbs in my legs where I've had all the injuries to sort of glutes and core. I've been working with him for 3 years and I haven't had an injury for 3 years, which has been great. It's actually... probably towards the start of last year, it actually almost worked against me because I was just not getting injured. I was able to train so much, I almost overtrained and just sort of wrote myself off a little bit. But that certainly helped. And I guess as well, when you sort of overcome these injuries, I guess it builds a bit of character and perseverance, which is necessary for marathon running. You've got to sort of have those.
Yeah, definitely.
Those qualities,
especially when, especially when things start to get tough in the last 7K. Well, let's move to the marathon.
Yep.
So, as I mentioned before, you ran Amsterdam. At what point did you decide that you were going to run a marathon? Because, you know, you've run quite well on the track, and you qualified for last Comm Games on the track. So, where was the thinking behind the marathon and not the track?
So I was actually thinking, it was actually specifically for Comm Games. I was thinking what would be the, you know, my best chance to qualify for Comm Games. I was looking at the 10K and I thought I'd probably only have one chance to run a 10K, which would be Zatopek. And that's, you know, traditionally not, you know, it's a championship race. It's not necessarily paced. So I thought, 10K is obviously also loaded at the moment with guys like Tiernan, McSween, you know, Brett, Dave. So it would have been pretty hard to break in there. I've always thought that my strength has sort of been those longer distances, so I thought, look, it's probably time to give it a crack. So I spoke to Dick about it, and he said, I think early August, we decided to do a marathon. We didn't decide which one, but we just said, that's when we'll do it and try and do it before the end of the year and try and qualify. So
that was August, and what, Amsterdam was October. Was that 7 week prep, was it?
I've been running a fair bit before. Before we decided to do it, like maybe 170, 180k a week before then. So I was, I wasn't unfit.
Yeah.
Made that decision. I actually I had to do a half as well because I hadn't actually done a half either, and I needed to get into the elite field so as I could get my own drinks and things. So I decided to do a half, which was the Australian champs.
Yeah.
So I did that, ran a decent time there, managed to get into the elite field, and it was either Chicago or Amsterdam we were going to do about the same time, but for some reason I just picked Amsterdam. I wanted to do it.
So you ran 64.08 on the Sunshine Coast, is that right?
Yep.
Very good. And so in the lead up to Amsterdam, how did your weekly training look? So what were you doing on sort of each day?
Yeah, okay. So Dick's got a pretty specific sort of marathon phase. Normally I think it's about 10 to 12 weeks. For me it was a little less just because I decided to do it later. So I guess a typical week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday would be easy days. They would be, I'd do 15K in the morning, 10 in the evening, and that was pretty much the whole way through. Then obviously Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday was sort of the main marathon specific sessions. So, I mean, I can give you an example. Tuesday might have been maybe a 30K run, but with 15K sort of solid effort in there. So it might have been like 10K warm up, 15K solid, 5K warm down, something like that. Thursday then might have been something very similar as well. So these were sort of on the road around the lakes, marathon specific type, you know, courses. Thursday might have been something like 3x15 minutes. And again, making up that volume to 30K, I'd probably go for like a short jog in the afternoon as well, maybe half an hour or something just to get a few more Ks out. Saturday might have been something a bit quicker, so a bit more focused on sort of 10K speed, and that would have been with a group as well. Normally out at Stromlo, maybe, you know, 4 or 5x5 minute efforts or something like that, just to try and keep legs sitting over a bit quicker. Yeah. And then Sunday, did consider Sunday to be a session day as well, which I've struggled to get used to. Normally just used to go out for an easy long run. But yeah, Sundays I try and get up to sort of around that 40K. I didn't get as many as I would have liked, but yeah, the 40K. And sometimes it might even be hard 10K in the middle of that 40K just to sort of deplete your glycogen a little bit more and get used to running on empty.
Yeah. And so those long runs, were you doing those like fasted, or were you taking any nutrition on during those 40K runs?
So I was taking a couple of gels with me, and something I've learned since then is that probably the best way to do it would be have a period where you're actually not taking any fuel on board to sort of get your body used to that glycogen depletion, and then maybe a little bit closer to the race you'd actually take quite a few gels and quite a few drinks on your runs to get your gut used to taking in all those sugars and carbs, etc.
Yeah.
So that's something I'd probably try and do next time.
And those 30K runs with marathon stuff in the middle,
yep.
Say for example 30K with 15K hard in the middle, was that at sort of at marathon pace, or were you doing stuff to heart rate or just by feel?
Yeah, so it was, initially it wasn't quite at marathon pace just because I struggled early on adapting to that training. But by the end, that was marathon training. And then if I was doing something like a 3x15 minute or 3x5K or something, that would probably be at marathon pace or a little bit quicker by the end, which was good. So yeah, I definitely saw some progression there in the training.
And do you use heart rate at all or not?
So yeah, absolutely. So Dick, if Dick doesn't watch your training, which he didn't for most of my marathon training, he wants, basically that's the only thing he looks at, just heart rate. So when you ask me if I use heart rate, I don't really, but Dick does. So
yeah, okay.
He's the brains behind the operation. I just
answer. And so you maxed out at around 200 before Amsterdam, 200 kilometres a week?
So I was trying to hit about 200 in that specific marathon phase. There was a couple of weeks I did a bit more than 200.
Yeah.
I think my biggest was about 219. I did a couple around about 210 and then a couple at 200 and then maybe a few less as well.
So. And how far out does Dick start his taper?
So I think about the third week out from the race, I think I did dropped it back to about 170, 175. The second week out, maybe about 140. And then the week of, maybe 70K, like not much at all,
And comparing, I guess, the marathon training to, when you're training for a 10K, what did you find most challenging about it? And I guess, what did you maybe enjoy about it compared to 10K?
I guess probably the most challenging thing would be that doing most of the longer sessions on your own. So just mentally, it's quite hard sometimes to get motivated. And when you're doing those, 15K efforts in the middle of a 30K run, just to mentally sort of stay with it, that's probably the hardest thing. I actually really enjoyed marathon training compared to track training, just because, you know, when I do my sessions Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, they were always really big sessions, and it almost sort of forced me to run a lot slower on the recovery day. So I was almost, you know, a lot slower than I've ever run before. Mm. You know, sometimes even average 5 minute K pace for 15K, which is quite slow compared to what I was used to. But I feel like if you do the sessions well, you're sort of almost forced to have pretty easy days on those recovery days.
And then getting into Amsterdam itself, what was the process there? Did you organise that yourself, or did Dick organise that?
So it was actually Alex Vandermeer, who's assistant coach with Dick. He had some connections. He's actually Spanish Dutch, and he'd lived over there for years, so he actually sorted all that out for me. Got me into the race, got me accommodation, everything. So yeah, it worked out pretty well in the end.
Yep. And how far before the race did you head over?
So I headed across, I think, Friday about 8 or 9 days before, arrived Saturday, and then just had a pretty easy week over there, which was nice.
Very good. All right, we'll stick with Amsterdam. And so I guess it was your debut.
Yep.
And so during your 7 or 8 week build up, how did you and Dick come to, I guess, a game plan, or what did you think was realistic? So was there a particular session that you did that maybe said you could run 2:12 or 2:13?
You'd probably have to ask Dick that. I mean, I think he had a pretty good idea in his head of what I was capable of doing. So, and when I said to him, I want to go out at about 66 minute pace, he said, "Yep, I think you can do that." Because I was trying to qualify for Com Games, we actually looked at, so Shelley and Liam had run about 2:12:50 a couple of weeks before me. So I thought, look, you know, and I sort of thought Collis was actually going to do one later in the year as well. So I thought, if, you know, if I'm any chance to get in, I probably need to run under 2:12:50. So that was sort of the target.
Yeah.
Didn't quite pull it off, but I guess it sort of worked out in the end.
Yeah.
But yeah, I spoke to Dick and he said, yeah, look, I think you can give it a crack.
So it was more so your game plan was based on what really other people had run and what you thought you'd have to run to make the team. So than maybe what you're doing physically in training.
That's right. And I thought, look, I mean, you know, if I blow up and don't run that well, it's a learning experience. And if I pull it off, I pull it off. So, yeah.
Yep. And so the race itself, I guess because you'd never run a marathon before, what was your fueling strategy in terms of, I guess, gels, fluids, that sort of stuff?
So for gels, I tried to take 3, about 15, 25 and 35.
Yeah.
And then drinks just at all the other stations. So I was using an Aqualite solution, which I've found pretty good, pretty easy to get down. I think it was developed for use in the mines in Western Australia. Actually, some of the miners used to use it, so it's pretty good.
So is it called Aqualite?
It's called Aqualite.
All right.
Aqualite. So I found that really good.
And so that's a carb and electrolytes?
No, that's not carbs. So that's just purely electrolytes. Yep, so I was just taking the carbs with the gels. I got the first gel I went to take at 15K, I actually got knocked out of my hand by one of the officials. So I just left that. And just had a drink. But everything else went pretty well.
So you only had 2 gels during the race?
I grabbed something. I was dying in the last 7K and I grabbed something. They had some sort of like sports gel just at the station. And I grabbed that with about 5K to go just because I was battling with it. Yeah.
So I guess speaking about that last 7K, coming from a track background and I guess in training you never really experience anything like the last 7K of a marathon.
Yeah.
How did you find the last 7K and sort of what, did you have any sort of mental strategies to just get through it? Like,
yeah, it was definitely not something I've ever experienced before, that last 7K. Well, for me it was 7K of the marathon. I mean, up until that point, I basically memorised the splits I wanted to hit. I was sort of just under that up until about 30. I started to fall off a little bit 30. Then at 35, I knew I just wasn't making those splits anymore. And the mentality just changes from trying to hit those splits to finish it. Just do whatever it takes to finish. And when I did finish, I actually, like, despite the fact I hadn't run quite as fast as I wanted to, I was actually just stoked. Like, it's a really strange feeling just finishing a marathon. Like, it's very satisfying, and I'm sure anyone who's done it sort of understands that.
Yeah,
no matter what time you do, it's still, you still run a marathon. So.
And like, although you didn't run as fast as you wanted to, like, you certainly didn't have a massive fade, which you know, a lot of people that run that quick of a over a marathon have often strung together 5, 6, 7, 8 years of good training together, whereas I think you were telling me yesterday that up until your recent up until your last injury, you probably struggled to string together more than 6 months of training consistently. So it must give you encouragement to run a marathon so well for your first one off not a lot of volume or not a lot of consistency compared to, you know, other marathoners.
Yeah, I think so. But I mean, I have run a lot in the past. I think I had that going for me as well. And obviously Dick's a very good coach. So I did do, you know, quite a few weeks at 200, I guess. So I understand that as well.
And I know you're saying yesterday you seem to think that you got a lot of value from those close to three hour runs, like, which is obviously a lot, you know. You're not running maybe the full marathon distance, but you're on your feet a hell of a lot longer than what you're racing for.
Yeah, that's right. I think they were probably the most valuable thing, those sort of long Sunday runs. I wish I had done a few more, because I think by the time I got to, I think I maybe did five at 40k or 41, 42, whatever. And by that last one, I sort of almost felt like legs were starting to get conditioned a little bit to running that distance.
Yep.
But then I sort of started my taper. It would have been nice to do a few more weeks where I was sort of feeling comfortable at that distance, but maybe next time.
And before the race, did you chat to anybody about carb loading and that sort of thing? Like, did Dick have any advice on that?
So he was the one who suggested taking gels, those gels. Carb loading. So I actually did. So I think from the Sunday the week before until Wednesday, went through a bit of a carb depletion stage. So just eating yogurt and nuts and salad, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
And then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, a bit of a carb load. I think I possibly almost overdid it. Got a bit excited at the hotel there at the buffet. But it was good. And I think it worked. Like, I felt great on the day. And
Very good. And then I guess obviously you said you felt the satisfaction at the end of the marathon.
Yep.
But I guess, the qualifying period still had a fair way to go. And as you said, you thought Collis was going to run. So I guess, although you would have been super excited about what you'd run, I guess you couldn't really start to celebrate at that point in time.
Yeah.
At what point did you, up until you got the call, was there a point before that that you thought, well, I should be on the team here?
There wasn't until Fukuoka had been run, I think. Who was it there? It was Decanto. He ran a really good marathon there as well. And I actually thought Collis was running Fukuoka up until about 2 days before, when Alan Craigie sent me a picture of him running in Ballarat or something like that. So that gave me a bit of confidence, but not until that race was done.
And so a lot of our listeners probably don't realise that you're a full-time accountant.
Yep.
And so obviously trying to fit 200 kilometres in around full-time work is challenging.
Yep.
How do you manage your time to be able to do that? And is work, or does work help at all?
I actually really enjoy working and training, just because of the routine. Like, you get into a routine, you run at the same time every day, you eat at the same time every day, you work at the same time every day. I was lucky enough to have a gym just next to my work, so I'd go there at lunchtime and do my gym. That was really good. I guess the thing that you sort of miss out on a bit is I only have 4 weeks annual leave, so I can't travel as much for races. You don't get as many opportunities to run races. And typically, you won't run as well. Mm. So I used to be an auditor, which I found very challenging because there's lots of travel involved. Back in Melbourne, I was traveling 2 hours a day just to get to different locations, and training on top of that was quite hard. At the moment, I'm working in tax, which is a little bit easier just because I'm in the same spot. And I've actually recently negotiated 2 days a week at work, where I'm actually starting a bit later and just working later. And that just gives me a chance in the middle of the week to sleep in and just get a bit more rest, which has been amazing. So, previously, the last 6 years, I've sort of been getting up five, doing my runs, doing whatever, and just having that extra couple of hours of sleep has made a huge difference. Yeah, it's great.
And before we get on to, I guess, your Com Games prep, you mentioned you go to the gym, and obviously this is more sort of prehab type stuff. Yep. What sort of things do you religiously do now to make sure that you stay in one piece? What sort of exercises are they?
I do heaps of stuff with, like, TheraBands and squats, weights, that sort of stuff. A lot of the focus is on just strengthening up the glutes and hips and things like that, just to take a little bit of pressure off the lower limbs. I've actually started doing one stretching session a week as well. It probably sounds a bit stupid. I I don't come from, like a lot of runners come from physio or, you know, physiology sort of backgrounds as well. You know, they're studying that, so they know a lot about the body. I know very little. I'm like, honestly, if, you know, people ask me for a hammy stretch, I probably wouldn't even be able to tell them how to do it. So yeah, Ben's been helping me out with a bit of stretching as well. And it's actually, I find it, it's almost like an additional sort of injury prevention type session, just in the way he does it. And yeah, he's great. Like, he shows me all these stretches I had no idea about and seems to be working well, so.
All right, so Comm Games prep. So we're not that far away. Have you sat down with Dick yet and come up, roughed out a plan?
Yeah, we've got a rough plan at the moment. So I'm actually doing a half marathon in about a week and a half in Japan. So that'll be just a bit of an indication of where I'm at in terms of, yeah, I guess, fitness. And then I think as soon as I get back, it'll just be specific marathon training up until the games. I probably won't do any other races. Maybe if there's a 10k to sharpen up or something. I'd like to do that a month out, but I'm not sure there's much around that time, so I'm happy just training. I'll probably try and get to somewhere up north, Cairns or Noosa or something like that, to do a bit of training in the heat before the race. Just as long as I can get the time off work, so I've got to negotiate that in the next couple of weeks as well.
And does AA, so does Dick liaise with AA to come up with a plan, or is it just purely Dick? Does AA give you any support between now and Comm Games if you do want to go travelling somewhere?
I don't think they'll give me support because I'm not, you know, I'm no Michael Shelley, Lisa Waitman type thing.
You're still on the team, but you're still, you know, you're still an Aussie.
Well, I actually just recently got access to the AAS Recovery Centre and the gym there, which is, I've never had that before, so that's something. I don't think I'll get any travel assistance or anything like that. But yeah, I think I'll just let Dick sort of manage that, and he can sort of liaise with AA, and I'll just follow his plan.
And any goals for Comm Games?
No, not really. I mean, it's an interesting one because it's going to be in Gold Coast. It's going to be humid. I think a lot of people will be underprepared for that humidity. So I'm hoping that, obviously Dick's had some experience there, and I can sort of follow his plan well. You know, as long as I'm in shape for the race, I'll be happy, and hopefully the rest of the results will take care of itself.
So obviously he's going to be a bit warmer and more humid than most, you know, marathons that you would probably race in. How do you feel? Do you like running in the heat? Do you struggle in the heat?
Traditionally I've struggled in the heat, I think. But I think as you get older as well, and your body sort of adapts to that a little bit better. I found recently, training in the heat in Canberra, I mean, although it's not that, it's a dry heat, it still does get quite hot. I've actually been pretty good recently, so I'm hoping that with a bit of, I might try and get into humidity or heat chamber, humidity chamber at UC. Do a few sessions just to sort of adapt, and then hopefully some time up there.
And so after Comm Games, like, I'm still having a look at your track PBs. To me, there still seems to be some unfinished business. Like with your PB of 13:58 for 5Ks there, do you feel like you'll step back onto the track?
I'd really like to sort of try and, well, all my track PBs, I feel like I've probably got a bit of room for improvement. I'd like to. It's just a matter of fitting that in. I think all my PBs except for the marathon have been done in Australia, just because I don't have the opportunity to travel because of work. It'd be nice to maybe go to America for a couple of weeks and try and do a good 5K and a good 10K. But then I'd also like to do, you know, another couple of quick marathons in the next couple of years as well, so it just depends how that all sort of pans out.
Do you have any dream is there any marathon like around the world that you've like that would sort of be a bucket list for you that you really love to get to and run?
Well, everyone always talks about Berlin. I mean, I'd love to do any of those German ones. Berlin, Frankfurt, I think. Hamburg. London's always been one I've wanted to. I'm not sure why. I was actually speaking to Sean Crichton, and he mentioned it wasn't actually that quick. He thinks it's a bit overrated. But I think just for the atmosphere and the crowds, and it's just one of the big, well, it's one of the majors, isn't it? So that'd be good to do.
All right. Well, I think that's pretty much everything, but definitely appreciate, you know, giving up your morning off to come and come and have a chat. And as I said before, you know, like, you being selected shows that, you know, perseverance does pay off, like with the amount of setbacks you had and things like that. And yeah, couldn't happen to a nicer guy, because I, you know, still remember the day that you paced me to a first ever sub 30.
Well, let's get the story right. So you actually paced me to my first ever sub 30. It was funny. I think you might have mentioned it before, but the first time I ever met Croaks was about two laps into a 10K race, and we were just running together, and he just looks at me and goes, "You want to take two laps? 800 each for the rest of the race." And I was like, "Yep," and that was it. And we just worked together, and it was great.
Yeah, but
he smashed me in the last couple of laps, unfortunately. But it's actually one of my favourite athletics memories. It's not often you get to sort of, you know, share a race like that. You know, work together as a team.
Yeah,
well, in a very individual sport. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think we would have had the relationship that we have now if that race didn't happen.
Yeah, yeah.
But the thing that stuck out for me in that race was, with about five laps to go, we're coming up, and it was almost your turn to take the next two laps, and you're like, "Man, I don't think I can. I'm done. I don't think I can do it." And yeah. I said, "Well, look, if you just take the next one lap, I'll take the last four." And most people, when they're pretty much cooked, will never ever go to the front. They're just like, "No, I'm out for myself." But you actually went to the front and did your turn. So. It's just a sign of the type of guy you are.
We both got a sub 30, so it was worth it.
We did, yeah. So, all right, well, all the best for Japan next week.
Cheers.
And obviously with the prep for Com Games. So this time you're definitely going to get the singlet.
No injuries, right?
Yeah, so thanks again.
Thanks, heaps, man. Stay on love.